Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Tuesday evening slash afternoon. Sorry for being a little bit late this week, July 4th holiday and all that. Joining me from Los Angeles is Dave McMenamin. Hello, Dave. How are you?
Hello, Brian. This surely figures to be a very interesting podcast. A very interesting podcast.
Most people will be listening and they won't know what you're doing and we'll just move on. Joining me from New Orleans, where he's actually, I believe, at the Pelicans facility right now, Mr. Andrew Lopez. Hello, Andrew.
That is correct. I am also honored to be on a podcast with Wrestler The Miz's favorite ESPN personality.
Well, I have to say, you know, there are a few guys that I go way back with, and The Miz is one of them, being somebody from Cleveland. So what can I say? I don't know anything about wrestling. I'm sorry. When I was a kid, my favorite wrestler was Junkyard Dog. Okay. That's right. I said it. He sometimes tag teamed with Hulk Hogan. Everybody focused on Hulk Hogan, but I was a fan of Junkyard Dog, okay?
I want somebody to aggregate that tomorrow. Brian Windhorse's favorite wrestler is Junkyard Dog.
When I was a kid, that is true. Absolutely true. I went to multiple wrestling events at the Richfield Coliseum, RIP. So we got some stuff going in here. I think contractually obligated to start with the Brooklyn Nets. Over the weekend, not a lot happened, but from what I can tell, there was an attempt by the Nets to make it clear there was not going to be an artificial deadline here. They are going to take their time, which they should. And, but I'm going to just say about the Nets what I said back in February when it came down to the James Harden trade. Everything you hear, especially if it's, you know, everything you hear is a negotiating position. It is a negotiating position that they are taking. And it is the correct negotiating position when you have something as important as Kevin Durant. And one thing that I will say that I feel is relevant is that what I am told that that the Nets are prioritizing getting players back in this deal, that they want the prime assets in this trade to be a star player or high-level star players, that they're not focusing on draft picks, although I'm sure they want draft picks too. Now, I'm not going to violate my own rule. 35 seconds later, that's a negotiating position. However, it does sound like that's what they want. And Andrew Lopez, this is one of the reasons why we've talked about the New Orleans Pelicans in regard to this, because instantly they came up as a team that, even though they're outside the initial Durant wave, that they have young star players. So we had big news over the weekend, and I assume that when this pod comes out, sometime on Wednesday, I believe Zion Williamson, not only is he planning on signing his new contract extension, he's planning on signing it publicly, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
That it seems to be the plan, and they're going to do it relatively quickly. I remember when he talked to us in April for the first time all season, he was asked about the extension, and he said, I wouldn't be able to sign it fast enough. And, you know, of course I would sign it, all this kind of stuff. He is going to sign it very quickly. Per the CBA, they are allowed to start signing these extensions at 12:01 p.m. tomorrow or on July 6th, which just happens to be Zion's 22nd birthday, by the way.
Oh, congrats. If I could get
$193 million on my birthday, I would also be a very happy camper. But he is going to sign it. I would expect an official announcement from the Pels very, very quickly tomorrow.
Let me ask you this. Is it actually going to, you know, I know that it's $193 million possible. The details about what's guaranteed have been kept very tight so far. But
very much so.
I mean, they can keep them tight, and I respect that. It's fine. But the NBA world will know. The contract will be filed, and it will be known what's guaranteed. Would you expect, Andrew, that a contract that was agreed to, like I think July 2nd or 3rd, they agreed to it?
Yeah, it was the 3rd or second, I think.
Considering that the Pelicans had time and the rules on their side, I would think that they kind of would have achieved something that they were after, which was protecting themselves on part of this contract. So would you assume that some or significant part of this contract is injury protected, or maybe you could use the word non-guaranteed. They may fight the word non-guaranteed, but injury protected somehow.
Yeah, I would expect that they would have gotten something. I mean, if it was going to be, you know, just a regular, hey, this is the 5 year 193, it might have been done a little bit quicker. But
or if Zion was digging in,
true,
that he would have waited, the Pelicans would have waited. I think it's more the other way. Like if the Pelicans didn't get some concessions, they wouldn't have agreed so fast.
Right. And the other thing was, I mean, the other big concession is if it's, what's the fifth year on this? Is it the player option? Is it the team option? Like you said, everyone is being very tight-lipped about this right now. You poke around on, I think, on both sides, and you're not getting much. But I would think there are some levels of protection in that deal, just because you know, you go back to comments that Griff made right out, you know, when the day that Zion said, "Hey, I wouldn't be able to sign it fast enough." Griff talked about, "Look, this isn't going to be, you know, the easiest negotiation." He knew right then, like, look, we were going to have some things in there. Obviously, he came back and later said that he felt Zion was a max player. That was never in question, but would think it would be something in there. Exactly what, you know, maybe when the contract is filed, we'll, you know, eventually get a little bit more details on that. But for now, I would think they have something in there.
Dave, I agree with what Griff said. You covered, you know, Griff well. I agree that Zion is a max player for sure.
Yeah.
He's just not a guaranteed max player, right, Dave?
Of course. And I understand where the team's coming from, because you do have these glimpses of when he's been on the court. He's highly efficient and bodies bounce off him when he gets into the lane. And he has a court sense and the ability to put the ball on the floor and all those things. And he's a singular name superstar. I'm just curious, Brian, if you have an answer to this, does the NBPA get involved in something like this? Because the last thing the players union wants is high profile players conceding guaranteed money. Like, this is the future of negotiating positions for players across the league.
There's provisions that are available out there. You know, there's injury protections. I think Zach LaVine, and I would helpful, you know, if I had the, you know, the incredible, you know, index that Bob, the intelligence that Bobby Marks has. I think Zach LaVine had an injury protection, for example, in his contract, that if he had some sort of injury to his knee, that they were protected on it. I think you can get protections on various body parts. And obviously there's sort of games played. I mean, those are negotiations things that are already in there. Like if he had signed like a 5 year contract that had no guaranteed money in it, where it was like, you know, we're going to pay you $5 million every 10 games you play. And then I think the Players Association is like, whoa, wait a minute. This is not what we're doing. I don't think it was going to that. I just think, you know, I mean, and Griff's on the record is saying this, but look, I've talked to Griff about it. Andrew's talked to Griff about it. I don't know if you've talked to Griff about it, Dave. I mean, I talked to Griff about it months ago, months and months and months ago. I talked to Griff about it at the beginning of the season. They've been thinking about how this contract was going to be negotiated and put together for a long time. And I'm sure Zion has too. So I am not surprised that they're making a very big deal about the signing of it, because there was so much during this last season that illustrated that Zion and the Pelicans were not functioning efficiently. Is that a good way of saying it, Andrew, without getting myself in trouble?
Yeah, I think so. And then I think a lot of red flags went up when he decided to do his rehab in Portland and get away from the team, which he left the team in January. But when he did come back, he came back early from the original timeline in terms of when he was actually going to be back in New Orleans around the team.
The new original time, the original timeline was a hell of a show.
Whatever timeline it actually was. But when he did get back, it was
the revised timeline. He did come back early.
He was obviously supposed to stay another, I think, a month in Portland and rehab up there. As he got back, that's when the Pels started making their playoff push. But the team had changed at that point. Then you had CJ McCollum around. You had Larry Nance around. And all of a sudden, they were making that push for the play-in. And every, you know, as the vibes were great around the team, and he wanted to be a part of that. And I think the big thing here is, even if you look at this team as constructed, the team, this is the lineup the last time Zion was on the floor, these are the players that he played with: Eric Bledsoe, Lonzo Ball, Steven Adams, James Johnson. James Nunnally got 9 minutes in that game. Najee Marshall was playing 23 minutes. He's probably a guy who doesn't, he's going to be, you know, a 12th or 13th guy. I mean, this team has changed a lot around him. And I think now it is much better than it was set up, you know, in May of 2021 to be a contender. We kind of saw them make that initial push during the playoffs this year. And I think Zion and his camp like the direction that that's going, and they are making a big, you know, big news about him wanting to stay in New Orleans.
Right? I know. It's kind of like, you're like, oh, you Debbie Downers talking about what's guaranteed. Why can't you just focus on the fact that he's signing it and that he's healthy? Okay, we will. It'll be good. And I will tell you that it sounds like CJ McCollum is having some contract negotiation talks with the Pelicans. I'm not sure when he can actually sign that, Andrew. I know he signed his last contract extension in 2019, but
it is next month when they can start talking about that. I know it's before the season, but it's
maybe they haven't talked, but I heard they talked. Don't tell anybody. Okay? it's kind of like you know, Clutch Sports. Last year they got dinged in that the Lonzo Ball tampering thing. The Bulls got dinged for it, got penalized, the second round pick. Rich Paul of Clutch Sports negotiated it. I mean, it was kind of laughable because, like, literally there was like 25 contracts that were done before July 1st. But okay, that one was deemed to have been against the rules. So all of Clutch Sports' clients, like, none of them announced a deal on the actual 30th. Then, like, on July 1st at like 11 a.m. or noon or something like that, all of a sudden Clutch announces on their Twitter feed like four contracts all stacked up. Zach LaVine has agreed. Yusef Nurkic has agreed. They announced boom, 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 boom. Well, it was you know, they were like, listen, we're not getting busted for any tampering nonsense. And then it was like, oh, all of our contracts were all to agree to in the last 35 seconds. And they all just came through here. So,
Brian, the best illustration of tampering I've ever been told is from an agent I think all of us know, Bill Duffy, long time in this business. And he pointed out the hypocrisy of it. And he said, if you're on a highway and the speeding limit is 65 and every car is going 75, whatever cars that are pulled over, they're going with the flow of traffic. They're not doing anything different than anybody else. And they're getting singled out. And like, why is this even something we're still talking about?
Well, if the cops are pulling them over for going 75, that's would be what this is. If the cops are pulling them over for going 100, you know, that's a different story.
Are there degrees of tampering? Like, come on. We're all adults here. It's a business. And guess what? It's not like back in the day where you can have the guy come through town once a year on the road trip and the front office executive somehow finds a way to meet up with him at the team hotel or something like that, or out for dinner or something. It's a constant communication year round between all the same parties. The agents have different clients on different teams, and they can talk to one front office and then be the intermediary to talk to another front office. And that's how business gets done. And the fact that we are even pretending like this is something the league has to care about is just a waste of all our breaths.
My favorite with that, it was when the last year during the of what tampering the teams should be looking after is when this was during this, I guess this was two seasons ago during the 2021 COVID year. And all of a sudden that was the one trip that all of New York's executives decided to come to New Orleans to come down and see a game where Zion Williamson was playing. It was crazy. All these restrictions. And that just happened to be the one game that they're going to go, you know, say hello to people on the court afterwards.
So, okay. So, and you know, by the way, I also think that the Pelicans are interested in extending Larry Nance's contract. We'll see if that gets done. The point is the Pelicans like the way they finished last year.
Yes.
And want to keep that going. And I think Zion, who was very much engaged in those games, right, Andrew? I mean, you and I were at all the playoff games. And the atmosphere around that team was pretty awesome. Save the Jay Crowder chants.
Right. Can we thank the Lakers for their downfall leading to the Pelicans' comeuppance, and really the Lakers' ineptitude is the reason why Zion Williamson is now a Pelican for years to come.
Well, I mean, they won the lottery with their own draft pick. So, you know, but one thing, if the pick that they got from the Lakers returned to Zion Williamson.
Meaning, I just mean their slide over the second half of last season kind of opened the door for the Pelicans to get that play-in spot.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, on the court.
Oh, yes. No, there was an incredible – look, at the end of the day, Lakers have a banner. Pelicans don't. So, I mean, the Anthony Davis trade is a success. However, there was some definite, like, as the Lakers went backwards and the Pelicans moved past them and the Lakers went into the lottery and ended up in the, and the Pelicans ended up with Dyson Daniels, who is probably a bit of a project. I, you know, Andrew, they don't think he's going to be like a significant contributor this year.
Maybe, right? Maybe not right away. We were actually watching, you know, Pelicans assistant coach and shooting guru or shooting doctor, as they call him, Fred Vincent, working with Dyson today and getting shots up. And I think we'll see how they use him in summer league. I don't know if he's going to end up, especially if they keep the rosters at 15 where they're at right now, they don't make any trades. Yeah. Dyson's probably going to be learning a lot as the 11th, 12th guy, but you know, that was kind of the same deal with Trey Murphy with them last year. And he obviously played a bigger role for them down the stretch. And I think that may be where they kind of see where Dyson is right now.
Having said that, have they announced Dyson Daniels signing yet?
They have not announced that Dyson Daniels has signed a contract yet.
Why would they?
What are you getting at, Brian?
Why would they do that? So once Zion signs this contract, he can't be. It's very hard to trade him to the Nets because then Ben Simmons would have to be off the Nets. Not impossible, but he becomes designated player, which Ben Simmons is as well, and so they can't have two of them. So Zion. Maybe he's not all the way off the table, but he's sort of on the side. Well,
can he not be traded for a while because of the contract anyway? Like, he can't be traded right away, right?
There's a poison pill thing that goes in there. Okay. I've never seen a player who signs an extension like this get traded anytime soon. Normally, there's a love fest for quite some time, especially if you're a potential superstar, which I believe
Zion Blake is. Griffin. Blake Griffin.
Well,
That was still a year.
That was within the same season, but that wasn't when he was, you know,
wasn't his first big extension.
This is the fun max. Everybody's happy. Zion signing. It's everybody's happy and it's fun. Let's have a good time. Darius Garland in Cleveland. It's the fun max. Oh, it's going to be so much fun. Yay. Everything's wonderful. I love the fun max. Let me ask if you think that the Pelicans are sort of straddling the line here while still believing that they're in it for Durant, should the Nets go that way, Andrew?
I still think it makes sense. It's a clean deal, right? If they were opted to be in that, if it was, you know, if other teams, like obviously Phoenix has the base share compensation thing, if they end up trying to trade DeAndre Ayton and things get complicated and hard cap comes into play. If the Pels decided to put a guy like Brandon Ingram on the table, they only need, I think, $4.5 million to then match salary. Obviously, you know, you can go in there with what kind of players you're good at.
I don't know what they're offering, but
I know they would like to keep Brandon Ingram and try to make something work. I think everybody would at this point.
Maybe they haven't quote unquote offered him yet. So if you put Griff on the stand and said, "Did you offer Brandon Ingram?" he could say, "No, Your Honor, that is not accurate." I mean, I suppose, but I mean, if they're having conversations, they have to know that it means Brandon Ingram, right? I mean, they're not taking, with all due respect, they're not taking CJ, a package around CJ McCollum.
Right. And I would assume that's what has been, again, discussed. But of course, that offer word, I don't think anything has been offered.
Everybody gets very upset. How dare you?
So no offers, but it's the cleanest of the deals in terms of, you don't really have to have another third, you know, a team involved. This is a team who, look, they have the young all-star and they have the picks. So whichever route the Nets want to go, it's kind of a, you know, all in one place to shop down here in New Orleans.
Dave, you know Brandon Ingram well. You covered him. If you were the Nets, would you still be taking the Pelicans calls right now?
I would, for sure. And of the young budding star conversation that we've just been putting together theoretical trades. We're not reporting on these, but you talk about a Utah package that if they were brought in as a third team or something like that, if we're talking about Donovan Mitchell or DeAndre Jordan or Scotty Barnes or Brandon Ingram, I have, if I'm a GM, the assets neck and neck rank between Barnes and Ingram as the most desirable player out of that group that has been floated out there. Because it's not even just that his game has notes that are reminiscent of right. Kevin Durant's, but you're going to put him with Ben Simmons and use someone who could score. He has a three-level game when it comes to scoring. And quite frankly, he's seen a lot in his short time in the league where I don't think he'd be fazed by a New York market or the upheaval of being with another roster. He's lived a lot in this short amount of time he's been in the NBA.
And the reason I mentioned Dyson Daniels is once you sign a rookie, you can't trade him for 60 days. Obviously, the season is a long way away, so that wouldn't be a deterrent. But, you know, if you weren't 100% sure, you would hold off.
Brian, do you know why the rule exists, why you can't have a Bam and a Ben Simmons on the same?
Yeah, it's an anti-super team rule.
Did it come into place at, like, was there a team that caused this to be a thing?
I'm not sure if it was the last CBA. Maybe Zach Lowe would like note off the top of his head. I don't have a good memory for this kind of stuff.
Okay.
But the concept is you have some guys, with the Fun Max is that it's one of the reasons it's fun is because the guy usually doesn't ask out. Usually at the end of the Fun Max, that's when it's not so much mm-hmm. fun.
Right.
Because the guy maybe doesn't want to stay, or maybe he's not, maybe he's still really good, but he hasn't developed into the superstar. And it's like, I'm still a max player. And they're like, well, I don't know. It's not as much fun anymore. And so the idea was they didn't want teams to be able, you know, basically they don't want teams like the Nets or the Lakers or whatever to be able to get two guys that were somebody yep. else's franchise player at one point.
Especially at that stage of their career too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So the thing about it is that, you know, Ben Simmons hasn't exactly, that was supposed to be the Fun Max with Ben Simmons. And it's, you know, there's an exception proves the rule or whatever. It hasn't been so much fun. So let's talk a minute about, so the Nets, they've said they want a young, you know, the when I've talked to league executives, they're like, well, the Nets have said to teams that they want an all-star under the age of 25. And I'm like, well, how many all-stars are under the age of 20? They've actually said they want multiple all-stars under the age of 25 from what I've heard. Okay, but maybe the word multiple can be debated. How many under 25 all-stars are there that are not designated players? There's not that many, right?
I know one of them.
One of them is Brandon Ingram, right?
He is.
Because he didn't extend. He has a new contract. His contract expired. He became a free agent, and then he signed. That difference in this case is pretty big. How old is Ingram? Is he about 25, Andrew?
He will be 25 when the season starts.
Okay. So he qualifies. That's one of the reasons people are looking at that. It's another reason people are looking at the Raptors, because Scottie Barnes is first year. He's not even eligible yet. Of course he's. And not only that, when you trade for a player who's on his rookie contract, you leave open the chance of a supermax down the line. Now, that's a long way away. But when you trade for a player who's still on that first deal, you basically get the same rights in the eyes of the CBA as if you had drafted him. So that's attractive. And they have OG Anunoby, who is not a star. Well, I mean, you could debate the word star, but under the age of 25 and highly coveted. And so that's why those two teams have come up. And Dave, the if you were in the Raptors' shoes, and this is why this is a negotiating position. If you were in the Raptors' shoes, because I think people do make an assumption. And I mean, I do it too. When I talk about, well, the Raptors could give Scottie Barnes, OG Anunoby, two firsts. Like we toss out what they could give. That's not how teams operate in trade talks. They don't make an offer like that coming out of the gate. They come out of the gate and, like, you know, typically make like middle of the road, if not worse offers. You know, they are, you know, they offer like, you know, three role players and a protected 2025 first. Like, that's like how and that's why sometimes these things take a long time to develop. Would you, and I'm building to something here, Dave, would you, if you were the Raptors and let's say they brought you in as a consultant, what would you say your first offer should be for Durant? What would your offer today be for Durant?
If I'm making an offer that is nowhere close to what my last and final offer would be.
No, I mean, like what would you offer for Durant right now if you're the Raptors?
Everything. I could give up while still holding on to enough to be able to feel like I can win a championship.
So you'd put Barnes. You'd put Barnes on the first offer.
If you wanted to be real about it, sure. Like,
okay,
it's going to require. Like, if I believed I could get him for Pascal and OG and some picks, I would do that. But I don't,
right?
You know, that's Sean Marks hanging up the phone territory,
right? And I think one of the reasons you're saying that is that you know that Phoenix is out there, that Miami is out there, that New Orleans is out there. You know, those other teams are bidding, right? Like, I think Woj said in the first 24 hours. And this was really good insight, and it sort of indicated where the league was. Teams were calling with offers for Durant, and then they hadn't heard back, probably because the Nets had a bunch of offers and were trying to get their, you know, their heads under control. And they would call back and raise their offers without even having heard a response. Like, they hadn't even heard no.
That's great reporting.
Okay. All right. So keep that in mind. Now, here's where I'm going. If you're the Lakers, what are you offering for Kyrie right now? What's your offer for Kyrie right now?
Russell Westbrook, one future first, 27 or 29. I don't really care. And honestly, don't even to mess with protections. Give him the pick, unfettered. Maybe a couple second rounders down the line. And sweeten the pot by saying you'll take on the $38 million that Joe Harris is owed over the next 2 years. And you can attach a Talen Horton-Tucker to the deal, and they get a young player who's had some bright spots and big moments, albeit coming off a down year that included some injuries. I think there's some value there. And they get the expiring of the Russ, which they could do all sorts of things with that on the back end themselves, and you are taking a headache off their hands. And I think that's a pretty darn good deal. Like, that's an offer that I think is realistic and good enough to get it done, as long as the Nets aren't operating out of spite.
And I'm wondering why they would offer that now. And maybe they're not, because we just said, you know, that all these teams are offering for Durant. Who's offering for Kyrie? I thought there was a report. I don't know whose it was. I'm sorry, the holiday weekend. There was a report that came out that said Philly, Dallas, and the Clippers were, or the Lakers, Philly, Dallas, and the Lakers were interested in Kyrie. And within about 90 seconds, reporters in Philadelphia were denying it. Like, in unison. You know, typically, I mean, look, you know, look, trade rumors are wrong all the time. I've said things I thought were true that turned out to be wrong. Said a lot of things are true that teams have denied turned out to be right. So you can't always say that. But like, all of a sudden, bam, 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 bam. I can report, you know, and I know Dallas has denied it.
I mean, James Harden is still on the Sixers. I mean, not currently under contract, but he's going to be on the Sixers. So like, can we recognize that he's not going to play with Kyrie Irving?
Okay, so that's my point. My point is, like, who's bidding for Kyrie? And that makes me wonder, if you're the Lakers and you know that, what's your actual offer right now? Like, are you actually offering all that? And do you blame the Lakers if they don't offer all that? And
I mean, and the beauty of it is that we're July 5th on the calendar, yeah, and training camp's not for 4 months or right, 3.5 months, or whatever. And so there's plenty of time to play the hardball. I'm just saying, you got to make the deal and make it happen. And that haul I presented to you is about as far as I'd be willing to go, where I think it's more than fair on both sides.
Okay. Now let me read you this. Jeannie Buss tweet. I miss KB, Kobe Bryant. He would understand and explain everything that I'm not allowed to. Honestly, he was the greatest Laker ever. I'm just going to let that repeat that for a second. Honestly, he was the greatest Laker ever. He understood the team over self, meaning your rewards would come if you valued team goals over your own, and then everything would fall into place. All can reply. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, barrel-sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. What? Dave, that's my answer. What?
Oh, man. This is some murky territory because
I'm not asking you to. I don't want you to go on a ledge that you don't know.
Well, no, I'm just saying let's try to explain the pitfalls that exist in having this conversation. Kobe Bryant, I loved watching him play. I watched him play since the time I was in middle school. He went to a local rival school, 8 miles down the road from where I went to school. I loved covering him. What a tremendous competitor. He's had Magic Johnson call him the greatest Laker of all time. Unassailable resume that just evokes all sorts of wonderful memories, and certainly the tragedy is still very raw. But if we were to actually go back and look with an objective eye at Kobe Bryant's time with the Lakers, there are things that would lead you to say he was not the greatest teammate. There are things that lead you to say that the way his contract was structured prevented the Lakers from winning late in his career, which in turn led to the longest down spiral in the history of the franchise prior to LeBron James deciding to come in 2018. And so that's why I got to lay it all out there like that, because to have an honest conversation here can be tough because, you know, emotions are raw. And
he also demanded a trade at one point.
Oh, yes, he did. Oh, yes, he did.
Yeah.
In my estimation, and listen, other parties involved here, and I'm talking about LeBron James, he's conducted business this way in the past by putting out cryptic tweets that, quite frankly, I don't think helped the process along what his teams were going through in that moment.
Agreed.
And I don't think Jeannie Buss's tweet is helping get business done at a high level in this moment as well.
Agreed. Andrew, what did you think of that?
No, it was definitely one of those things you look at. I remember seeing it this morning and you're like, it kind of today's point, it raises more questions than I think you would like to have at this point in the process. You kind of want to be in a situation where it's the cleanest possible. You don't have that many outside stuff. And when something like that happens, it just kind of raises, like I said, a lot more questions that I think that anybody really wants to deal with at this point.
Jeannie Buss has been on Twitter since 2009. She is extremely experienced now is what it means to be the president and co-owner of the Lakers, and knows that her words are very powerful, as LeBron does too. LeBron knows when he tweets something, he will instantaneously be reacting. And Jeannie probably, how many times a day wishes she could tweet something and doesn't? Because she knows that the consequences of her making comment on the record are vast and she can't control them. I could only imagine during the Showtime series or the HBO series about the Showtime Lakers, where every single week her father was being portrayed in a certain way, even though I happen to love the character in the show. I never met Jerry Buss, the man. I loved the character in the show. But, you know, it wasn't my father. So how am I going to say how she's going to feel? But my guess is she didn't love it. And I don't know how I would feel if my teenage self or, you know, young adult self was being portrayed. It wasn't me who said how it was. She could have made comment on that and she didn't. So, you know, if she's not even commenting on that, much less actually her team. And yet she comes out with this tweet. And by the way, like, you don't even need to know, like, of course LeBron wants the Lakers to trade for Kyrie Irving. I mean, Dave, do you want to have your salary doubled? Is it controversial to say something that's obvious? Like, of course you do. Dave, do you want to fly a private jet? Would you prefer to ESPN fly you in a private jet next season?
I don't know if I get to collect the miles on that one. So I may have a different answer than you expect.
Slight upgrade on Delta, regardless of your status, right?
Yeah, but Brian, here's the problem here. The Lakers have had a crisis in leadership for a while, and that has led to someone like LeBron, who has a clear vision of how he can wield influence and power in this league. And quite frankly, has a track record. While I understand it hasn't been the prettiest of stints in LA the last 4 years, but he can point to what happened in October of 2020 as proof is in the pudding. And let's follow my lead here. This is what he should be doing. And this is, quite frankly, if you want to draw the parallel to Kobe Bryant, this is what ruthless competitors do. They try to find any advantage that's there and exploit it and do whatever they can to stay on top. And guess what? Sometimes they make a wrong move. No one's denying that LeBron James was in support of landing Russell Westbrook last year. But you also have to be nimble enough to recognize that let's go out there and try something else.
Right. LeBron is known for flushing his whole team. It's happened several times where he's like, nope, start over. That's the real question. And, you know, it's easy for me to say this because, you know, anybody could say what they believe. But if Kobe was still with us and knowing that Rob Pelinka is one of his best friends and is the general manager of the team or president or whatever his title is, and LeBron called Kobe right now, like, let's say Kobe was, you know, in the editing room working on some new documentary or new series right now, and his phone rang and it was LeBron, and he said, KB, I don't know what to do here. You know, this team is not good enough. I really want us to trade for Kyrie. I don't give a flying bleep about 2027 draft pick. You know, what would Kobe tell him to do? What would the Kobe system say? You know, you know, I'm not so sure that that's what Jeannie's talking about here, but it's interesting. And it comes down to, I think, again, I'm not sure what the Lakers are offering right now, because if you, you know, one of the things that was so stunning in the league about this Rudy Gobert trade, when you talk to people in the league, they're like, who were the Wolves bidding against,
right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, there was a few teams in there.
Maybe Atlanta. You know,
Atlanta was, you know, kind of kicking around. Atlanta was in the middle of doing some other big things. Atlanta made a big move themselves.
Yes, they did, right.
You know, there were some other teams interested, but five players and four firsts, and then including one player who was just drafted, so it's almost like five firsts.
Right.
Like, that was some crazy stuff. That's almost like a desperation trade from a team that's not desperate, you know? So you see that. And if you're a team like the Lakers, you're like, well, who are we bidding against here? So it makes me wonder, knowing what we know about where the Nets are with Durant, and knowing where we are about where I think the lack of bidding is with Kyrie, how long is this going to take, guys? This could take a long time, Andrew.
I think the thing is, you may not be bidding against another team, but you could be bidding against the Nets just saying, okay, like, if you don't give us what we want, we'll just keep it and we'll just see what happens here and go from that. I mean, obviously we started off by talking about, you know, now they're, you know, if it takes forever with Kevin Durant, it takes forever with Kevin Durant. I think that's the only real team you're bidding against. And if I'm Brooklyn, that's what I'm going to have to do to drive that price up.
Well, hey, Brian, what was the trigger point or leverage play that we were both involved in reporting on with Kyrie Irving in the summer of 2017, when it looked like Cleveland was trying to play that card? Well, oh, we could just bring you back into the fold. Say we wouldn't report to training camp and get surgery.
That's right.
Yeah.
He didn't like that. So this situation kind of reminds me, and you could probably use some closer examples, but this situation kind of reminds me of the Dwight Howard trade when he actually finally got traded. I believe it was in 2012. He issued his trade demand like right at the beginning of July. I think he didn't actually, you know, it was his second trade demand. He'd asked to be traded. They decided not to be traded. And then he opted in, and then he asked to be traded anyway for after he had opted in. And it took like until, I want to say like August, this is just totally off the top of my head. It took like August 10th or 15th. It took like 5 or 6 weeks for it to all play out. And it was a three-team trade, and the Magic ended up getting less than they wanted. But what I thought was interesting there is that Brook Lopez was sitting out there as an unrestricted free agent at the time for the Nets. And the Nets, as you can remember, were trying like crazy to get Durant, and they were going to try to use Brook Lopez to get him. And Lopez eventually was like, forget this. I'm doing a deal now, or I'm not doing it. And Lopez came off the board, and that just guaranteed that the process was going to be slow, because then a big trade chip that was going to be, even if he wasn't even going to the Magic, even if he could have gone somewhere else, that just further put cold water on it. And so now we have DeAndre Ayton out there. And I know for a fact, I have been told, Ayton has met with other teams that are not involved in potential Durant negotiations. And I don't know if those teams have made formal offers or whatever. I'm not saying he's sitting, but like, if you're DeAndre Ayton and you're kind of being held up by this and you have an exit route, you know, that's what I'm watching. If Ayton takes an exit route here and goes and finds a deal, especially if there are a couple of teams out there that could still offer him an offer sheet. Indiana would be an interesting one, because after the Malcolm Brogdon trade, Indiana can generate max cap space, although it's still not 100% sure what's happening with Ricky Rubio, whether they're signing and trading him to Cleveland. But Also, Miles Turner is, he could be traded in a sign and trade for Ayton to Phoenix, or I have been told he could go somewhere else. But Miles Turner is almost, well, I shouldn't say, I'm trying to wiggle out of aggregation here. Miles Turner, there's a good chance he's not going to be a Pacer next year. It ranks as negative on the hot take scale, but I'm trying to wiggle out of aggregation. It'll be interesting to see if Ayton sort of taps out and exits himself from the process, because he's got to get himself taken care of, like Brook Lopez did. I can't remember the team that he had that made him an offer and he was ready to go. And the Nets just had to throw up their arms and just say, okay, Brook, we're going to sign you, and sort of move on in the Dwight sweepstakes. So that's one thing I want to see if it happens. And we've got, you know, the Nets saying we could bring them both to camp, and some people saying maybe Durant should reconsider. Like, you know, this is a narrative switch, that this is not happening fast. So let me ask you this, Dave. Is one play here for the Nets, especially if they don't love the Phoenix option and they don't love the Heat option, and the Pelicans option is complex and maybe Durant's not thrilled, and the Raptors option is it's actually not complex in terms of trade, but maybe Durant's not thrilled and you've got to deal with that. What if they just try to wait Durant out and say maybe reluctant status quo, especially with maybe Ayton? If Ayton takes another option, it reduces the Suns' capabilities to really pull it off.
Well, Brian, I've been paying close attention to all the reporting going on basically from the draft through the start of free agency. And there's this guy who's had a pretty good couple weeks detailing what's going on around the league. And you could, you know, pay attention to this guy's reporting and actually be able to kind of read the crystal ball of what's happening. This guy's you. And you have said repeatedly that Nets owner Joe Tsai is, this is my words, not yours, but pretty much fed up how the way things went. If that is the person handing out marching orders to Sean Marks, I don't see the patience to bring it back after surveying what's out there and saying, you know what, we can live with it to start the year and see. I just don't see it.
Well, I think the way I felt was he didn't want the status quo in terms of the dynamic that existed between Kyrie and Kevin and the team.
Right.
I thought there was a possibility they could bring them back, but like, gentlemen, we have new rules. This is how we're going to do things. We're going to dictate how things are going. Now, do I think that you can make that hard turn after 3 years doing another way? I don't know, man, especially with Kyrie having 1 year and, you know, maybe didn't want to be there. No, but with Durant.
So you're saying just bring it back with Durant. Still, well, move off of Kyrie and rebuild around him.
I'm just saying it. If the Nets don't love their options, leaving that door open in the back of the bus, so to speak, I may not close it in early July, even if you think you're probably going to have to go. But as we sit here today, and as the days have gone by and sort of the avenues have clarified, I don't know where the Jazz play into this, because the message that the Jazz are putting out into the world is, we're not trading Donovan. I don't find the Jazz messaging credible, because they said, like, they were like at the pre-draft camp, they were out there saying, we're not trading Rudy or Donovan. And they have a defense for that. They could say, well, we were saying that before somebody offered us 4 first round picks for Rudy, and, you know, everybody has its price. And, you know, if Danny Ainge said that, I would find that credible. But I think they have their price for Donovan too, and it behooves them to not put him on the block. Of course, we'll see what Donovan himself thinks about it. You know, from what I understand, Donovan was like, well, what's the plan here? You know, you've just traded away two players that were really helpful to us, and, you know, for draft picks essentially. And, you know, the plan basically is we're going to do what's right for the franchise. They've saved $150 million and picked up 5 first round picks in the last week. And in Danny Ainge and Ryan Smith's view, that's correct for the franchise. So if they deem the correct thing for the franchise is build around Donovan Mitchell, with all those pieces and parts, they'll do that. If they believe the correct thing is build around or trade you for another haul and start from scratch, then they'll do that. But what their priority is not going to be is what Donovan Mitchell wants, which they made clear when they cut his best friend, Eric Paschal, who they signed last year when they were really concerned about, you know, they changed their training staff last year because Donovan wasn't thrilled about it. And so I think a year ago, there was a lot of attempts by the organization to sort of make Donovan happy so that he would stick there and not want to leave. And I think with Danny Ainge in charge, it's like, we don't care about that anymore. We're going to do what we got to do. And maybe it includes you and maybe it doesn't. And we're paying you a huge salary. But this is another fun max. It isn't so fun. My theory is taking a beating on these two. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. But, you know, but without clarity on what Utah is doing, it makes it even harder for the Nets to say, well, there's an option for us in a three-team trade, because it just may be that the Jazz, and I mean, not even from a negotiating position, they could just be honest. They could be like, look, Suns or Heat, we appreciate your offer that you're trying to get Donovan for this package that so you can trade him for Kevin Durant. Thank you for the call, but it's not enough. We're not just going to move him to be part of this deal. We're going to move him in the deal that makes sense for us. And so I'm just saying that in the last 3 or 4 days, the Durant trades that looked like they may be feasible, that you could sort of draw up on the back of a napkin, I know because I was doing that last week, may not be there, including for New Orleans, Andrew. I mean, it may be more complicated, and it may just take some time. And I think the Nets will leave those options open.
I think the best thing I think the Utah franchise could do is trade the name Jazz back to New Orleans.
What's the offer? How many picks?
Whatever you want at this point. It's a name that makes sense. It's one of the best names in sports. But I mean, that's why I think this thing is, it could just drag out. If something was to everybody's satisfaction at this point, obviously a deal would have already been done. And I think if Brooklyn wants to try and wait it out to up their advantages right now and try to be like, hey, look, all right, we'll just sit back and wait. You got to start bringing us better deals if we're going to do this. And we can start to threaten, okay, we'll take it into camp, or we'll go like the James Harden situation a couple of years ago. And all right, well, let's just play it out and let these guys come back on the court for us before we make a deal. So to me, I think that's where, if you're Utah, if you're Brooklyn, like, everybody just sit back and wait for the better deal to show up. And I think if you're in New Orleans, you can. That's why maybe somebody hasn't been offered yet in any sort of deal. You're doing the same thing. You're trying to swing this deal for your role players and picks and, you know, hold on to your team. I think everybody's trying to, you know, it's one big game of chicken right now. And we'll see who cracks first.
Well, if it does go that route, unfortunately for KD, I don't think he will have the leverage play that Harden had in Houston because he doesn't have the same body constitution. So he can't just all of a sudden show up looking like he
ate himself. Ultimately the thing is that number one, you know, that Durant's passion is playing basketball. His passion isn't like stuff off the court.
Right.
So like, and also like what he thinks is most important other than basketball tends to wane a little, tends to shift a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I mean, the Nets know that. I mean, no, I don't think KD has the capability in him to dog it.
No, I actually agree with that.
I don't think he's not wired. He's not wired that way. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why he signed that contract last year with no opt-out. You know, he signed his first contract, the first ever fun max was the Durant max, because LeBron sure as heck didn't do it. The LeBron was a three-year contract. That first max from the Cavs was, it was called the Queasy Max. it came with a little ticking time bomb on it. Durant signed full 5 years, no opt out with the with the Thunder.
The Pepto Max.
Oh man, like we were sweating it. The day it was announced, it was like, why was it only 3 years? And LeBron was like, what are you talking about? Why are you asking me about my next contract? I just signed this one. And it was like, you're right, LeBron. It was like, you're right. But like, whew. Durant signed last year because he's like, look, man, I love playing. I, you know, sure, let's do it. Let's keep going. Like, that's how he believes. And that constitution could affect how this plays out, you know? I don't know. I think the general theme is we'll see. That's not what people want to hear, but we'll see. All right, Andrew, I'm looking forward to hearing those Zion contract details.
you and me both.
Hey, listen, I'll tell you one thing. He's going to get guaranteed nine figures. That I'm pretty sure of.
Right.
And it's generational wealth. And hopefully he's playing in the fall because – I do like watching him play. Dave, talk about Pepto. That's the Lakers fans, I think, for a while here.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think Russ's summer's going?
He was a guest at Kevin Love's wedding. From all accounts, it was a wonderful affair. Yeah. I don't know, Brian. I don't know. Listen, he has put his public support behind Darvin Ham, a very good hire by the Lakers, in my estimation. We talked to the Lakers' second round draft pick, Max Christie, who they traded to get that pick, you know, the guy who was a McDonald's All American. And Max told us the one Laker out of the big three who has reached out to him was Russ. He hasn't heard, as of last week, he hadn't heard from AD or LeBron. So Russ, for his part, is staying attached to the franchise. As we can see by my reporting, many others, the interest in Kyrie Irving is for a reason. He's a better basketball player than Russell Westbrook.
Well, I will say this about Russ. He makes $950,000 a week, whether it's on the Lakers somewhere else, whether he's working out in LA, whether he's packing up his gear, he makes $950,000 a week. So your life can't be that bad after picking up that option, right?
Yeah, he'll find a way to be just fine. But, you know, listen, I don't want to beat a drum here because I feel like in some capacity I've been saying the same thing now for 5 years. But when you got LeBron James and what's left of his prime, you better, as a franchise, be doing whatever you can to maximize it and try to add some banners, try to add some trophies. And that's what everyone in LA should be aligned thinking wise right now. And quite frankly, if it's cost prohibitive to do so, you have to rethink who you are as a franchise if you claim all you care about are those titles. Because that's not NBA in 2022 if you're trying to penny pinch and hoist up Larry O'Brien trophies at the same time.
One thing Jeannie Buss has done consistently, I assume she learned this from her father, she has made it a priority for the Lakers to take care of star players. And that contract that you talked about Kobe signing, which definitely held the Lakers down and contributed to their 7-year run of not making the playoffs. It was not the right thing from a team standpoint. She talks about that, but it was the right thing from a player standpoint. And I was talking to somebody in the league this last week and talking about how some of these players who were demanding trades wanted to be Lakers. They were like, boy, people have been trying to become Lakers for 75 years. And I go, it's actually 76 because we're now in the 76th season. They still want to be there. And that is probably the best thing the Lakers got going for them. And so keeping that in mind is something that Jeannie has always done. And so I think that is very relevant as we come here, especially as we think about LeBron James' contract option or his extension option to extend or not, which is coming in about 4 weeks. So, all right. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Wilson Hoop Collective. And we will talk to you later this week. I'm afraid we're going to be having the same topics for a while. So,
Ryan, I need 90 seconds of your time before we say goodbye. Just 90 seconds. Mm-hmm. Tell me your reaction to the meme.
Yes.
I mean, the thing is, First Take. So here's the thing about First Take. First Take, the A block, the opening block of the show, is 30 minutes long. Okay. It is not like Get Up, which comes right before it, where like you do three topics sometimes in like 12 minutes. And last week, Stephen A, I don't think this is secret, he had shoulder surgery. Mm-hmm. I think he was on air with a sling.
On NBA Today. Yep.
So he was out. Chris Russo, who, by the way, was the first time I worked with Chris Russo, met the Mad Dog. I had a great time working with him. But Russo was off on Friday. Basically, you know, like on Friday, like the First Take show was there. Stephen A was out. The sub Stephen A for multiple days that week, Chris Russo was on vacation, or his weekend had started. It was this big weighty NBA topics were there and I was there. And so when you have 30 minutes, you have time. It's actually kind of like a podcast. Well, that's something that I've done a lot of is podcasting. So I would never be able to do something like that on SportsCenter. I would never be able to do something like that on Get Up. I would almost certainly never be able to do something like that on NBA Today, because a lot of times on NBA Today, we have 4 and 5 panelists. And a lot of them, a lot more topics, quite frankly. First Take is usually doing 1 or 2, maybe 3 in that first A block, but a lot of times it's just 2. And so that had to have occurred on a show like that. So I was able to kind of draw out and like have a discussion about the Utah Jazz. People would text me and be like, oh my God, I can't believe this, whatever. I go, no. The accomplishment was me talking about the Utah Jazz on ESPN for 3 minutes. I'm like, I'm not taking a shot there. I'm just saying that would not normally happen on most of our television shows.
So the accomplishment, though, was the joyous response. The internet can be a dark, scary, negative, nasty place. And it was just pure joy and celebration of your storytelling ability and your decision to take a moment and not do the obvious, not just talk about contract structure and treat this stuff like, you know, the churn of transaction. You gave us something to chew on.
And it helped that it was a holiday weekend where there wasn't a lot of activity. All that contributed to it. And it really became more popular as a meme than it actually what I said. And it did certainly help that the Jazz, I mean, look, I knew the Jazz were pretty close to trading Rudy Gobert. I mean, when I was trying, you know, to be honest with you, part of what I was doing was trying to avoid aggregation, because if I come out and go, I think the Jazz are going to trade Rudy Gobert today, and then everything on the internet is, oh, Winhurst report, colon, Jazz to trade Gobert. And then, you know, maybe they don't trade him because they'd almost traded him the day before. And maybe they, you know, maybe Minnesota was only offering 34 assets and they didn't offer the 35th that got the Jazz to finally say, okay. But let's say they only offer 34. Now the Jazz don't do it. Now I said they're close to trading Rudy Gobert, and now I'm the idiot, right? Now I don't know anything. I went from knowing everything to knowing nothing. So I have to, in this world of aggregation, I have to get more creative, because you get pinned down on sometimes four words. You say 700 words, and you get pinned down to four words. And I will continue to get pinned down to four words because it's what I do. But I have to get creative and avoid aggregation. And so that was me avoiding aggregation in a setting where I had some time on national television. If you listen to the podcast, I've gone on rants that were way more elaborate than that. And Bontemps and McMahon are like roll their eyes, and Jackson like makes a little note about what to cut. But I've been doing stuff like that literally for years. So the fact that it happened on national TV, it took a specific set of circumstances, and that was all nice and everything. But like, in all honesty, I've been gone 8 of the last 9 weeks. My wife's 40th birthday is this week. I don't know if I should say it was her 40th, but it's her 40th birthday. And like, my son like finds it extremely annoying that I'm gone. I came back home and like had like nonstop family stuff to do, and like they didn't care about any of that. So yeah, like I was like getting 250 text messages and seeing all these memes, but like I had to prepare for the people that we had coming over for the 4th of July. I couldn't really focus on it. I didn't have the luxury of taking time to focus.
Well, I relished in it for you.
I focused on it a lot. It was, I really enjoyed all the memes.
Is there a favorite one, Brian? Come on. It's gotta be a favorite.
Here's why I am prepared to accept an endorsement. I will do something for Target. If they need someone to.
That was my favorite as well.
If they need someone, I will let you know. My DMs are closed, to be clear, but to Target, my DMs are open. Okay. If you want to, I will gladly do a highly compensated Target advertisement. So.
Well, I will echo Stephen A. Smith. Way to go, Wendy. It was great.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening. Thanks for your kind words, Dave. Thank you, Andrew. And I will talk to you guys later this week.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.